Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th of August, Anno Domini 2011, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, it is the 100th birthday of Lucille Ball. If you've checked out Google today.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It looks great. It's very, very cool. It's very, very cool. I was watching Lucy this morning on some channel, probably the TV Land or one of the others was doing a whole thing on that.
And almost a local girl, born in Binghamton, was it?
Born
Jamestown.
Where? Jamestown, yeah.
Yeah. The other side. I don't know why. I always get Binghamton and Jamestown mixed up. On opposite ends of the state.
Not if you have to go there, I hope.
Yeah.
Now you got me doing it.
Sorry. Jamestown native.
Jamestown native, she was a very underrated by our generation, I think, comedian. I was actually watching her today. She was terrific. She was actually quite terrific. I was very impressed. All right, let me start with the news of the week before we get to the phones. Security researchers revealed maybe I won't get to the news first. All right, we'll try it now. Security researchers...
Take three.
...revealed... That's all right. We'll clean it up in post. Security researchers revealed vulnerabilities in Chrome OS this week at Black Hat. By exploiting an issue in the pre-installed Scratchpad extension, the researchers were able to gain access to the data stored in a user's Google account. This is particularly noteworthy since Google has cited security as a benefit in using the Chrome OS. I forgot my Chromebook again this week and has been shifting its own enterprise desktops towards Chrome, Linux, and OS X. And speaking of OS X, ZDNet's Ed Bott, that's Bott with two T's, that's Mud with two D's, recently took a look at the future of Mac malware and considers why things have been quiet since the Mac Defender outbreak. Bott speculates that Mac Defender's disappearance in recent weeks is due more to Google rooting out the criminal's SEO strategy rather than Apple's patches, since the scam's Windows counterpart has also gone silent. Meanwhile, Bott has seen evidence of some particularly nasty OS X malware on security research mailing lists, but that haven't been seen in the wild yet. Earlier this year, Bott pointed out that Apple has disclosed numerous arbitrary code execution vulnerabilities. These are the type of vulnerabilities that enable drive-by attacks in which users can infect with malware just by visiting the wrong site, as opposed to having to be tricked into actively installing something, as with Mac Defender. The Chrome and OS X vulnerabilities go to show that there is no such thing as a free lunch when it comes to OS security. There will be vulnerabilities, and those need to be considered. The latest that takes us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And the poll is the latest vulnerabilities in Chrome OS and OS X, and your choices are make me despair for the security of my data, confirm my already cynical outlook, and don't bother me as my head is firmly buried in the sand. So far, we have 32 votes online, and luckily, don't bother me as my head is firmly buried in the sand is only the second of the three choices. Confirm my already cynical outlook is far in the lead. And, of course, when you're done with that, I know you'll have a lot more to say, so click the yellow box underneath where it says give us your opinion. It will take you to yet another website where you can, in fact, enter your opinion. Look at the little icon of that guy in the light bulb. He's a good-looking man. All right, and the question there is, what do you plan to do about the latest vulnerabilities in Chrome OS and OS X? And that's pretty much our question to you. How do you feel about these Chrome OS and OS X vulnerabilities? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so yeah, the Russian police raided a company called ChronoPay in Russia that appears to have been the tech support and payment processing company behind the Mac Defender malware and its Windows counterparts. So they might have caught the guys.
That would be nice. at least those particular guys, they're all of it or not.
Yeah.
All right. To the phones, Robin. Our first caller is Carl, all the way from Pottstown, PA. Welcome, Carl. How are you this week? Carl?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. How's the weather down there?
Pretty good, but we're expecting some rain a little bit later today and tomorrow.
Yeah, welcome to that club. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm in the habit of using Internet Explorer 8, although I also have Chrome and Firefox as alternate browsers. And I was wondering if you could recommend a good pop-up blocker mainly for IE8.
Yes, Chrome or Firefox. Sorry. AdBlock Plus should work, although...
Is that only for Firefox?
Is it? No. I know it's for Chrome as well.
We're frantically searching.
Because I noticed
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, under Dave's tips, I noticed that there's an old answer to a question that says, under Internet Utility Suite, there's something called the iClean pop-up stopper, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, that might be gone.
Yeah, that could be.
What was the other one we used to talk about? Stopzilla, the pop-up killer.
Yeah, Stopzilla. It does work on Internet Explorer, stopzilla.com. I don't know that that one's free. I believe you pay for that one. It's Stopzilla, the pop-up killer. So,
they've moved into full anti-spyware mode also.
Nice. But, yeah, I would check that out. The reality is that, as the folks at AdBlock themselves say, it's very, very hard to write a good and usable pop-up blocker for Internet Explorer. Microsoft doesn't give away a lot of the secrets of what's underneath the hood, and there are a million ways around any of the ways they've found of getting in there. So... that's too bad.
One of the latest things is pop-unders. So instead of a pop-up, the window pops under, and you don't necessarily notice it until you close your front windows. But I've been seeing more and more of those are now doing animation and audio. And so I'll be reading something on the web, and suddenly this, you know, commercial starts playing, and, you know, and I got to go find the window that it popped under.
Right.
And that's what the pop-up blockers turned on, because they're not pop-ups, technically.
Now, Internet Explorer 9 has something called tracking protection, and part of their what they do is pop-up blocking. You have to install the updates manually, but they come from EasyList, the group that provides the same list to AdBlock Plus. But that's IE9, and IE9 plus Easy Privacy really isn't quite as powerful a combination as AdBlock Plus and either Firefox or Chrome, but it's something. But the reality is that you're just not going to be quite as protected with Internet Explorer as you are with one of the other two. That's just a reality of life.
Mm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, sorry to disappoint you there, Carl.
No problem.
Thanks.
Yeah, the bad guys, it's a cat and mouse game between the bad guys and the good guys. As soon as someone comes up with a way to block something, the bad guys figure out a way around it. And then the good guys have to rewrite their code and figure out a way to block it. And then it blocks up legitimate pop-ups. You know, Nick had mentioned the updates. You know, with some of these pop-up blockers installed, the browser can't notify you there's an update because that's a pop-up window. And so you have to realize there's updates and download them yourself, which is even more annoying as well.
Well, that's one of the things that I like about Chrome, is that it does it by itself pretty much.
I hear some interesting arguments that a lot of security people hate the pop-ups that say there's updates. Well, it's nice to know there is an update, but then on the other hand, a lot of security people hate that Chrome updates itself without ever telling you. Without telling you what's changed and potentially threatening your third-party extensions. So the next time you launch Chrome, you find out, oh, there's a new version, and my favorite plugin doesn't work anymore.
Right. That is more of a problem than you might think. But I tend to like Chrome pretty much. Like I said, I bought a Chrome book, and I really like it a lot. I will bring it in. I just simply forgot it this morning.
Slacker.
I am. I admit it. And we had a nice. I have been having a nice time with it. It has a problem, and I think it might be RAM related. The folks at they have Chromebook ninjas at Google, and one of them, James, God bless him, is working hard on my behalf, and I'm very impressed by that, to solve the problem of my Chromebook. So I just sent him a log day or two ago, and he's checking that out to see what it has to say. It's a pretty long log, so I didn't really expect an answer.
Yeah, I had like three or four errands I was going to run this morning on the way to work. You know, as I'm driving past them, I had to get gas. You know, I didn't have enough gas to get here, where it's 15 cents cheaper a gallon than it is out in Victor.
Right.
But you ever get in that mode where I just drove right to work and forgot the three errands I was going to run on the way to work?
Yep. Been there. I have been there. You get to work and you think, what?
Yeah, I was 15 minutes early to work because I had left time, for the once, I had left time to run my errands.
Yeah, right.
That's scary. So I was 15 minutes late getting here because I still had to get gas.
Yeah, I know that many of us talk to ourselves while we drive, but I have a particular problem because when I take 490 West, there's a place where it splits off into three, and one goes to 490, one stays on 490, and if I take that, I'm going to work. If I go straight, I'm going to my father-in-law's house, and if I turn right, I'm going to Greece to come here. So there's, you know, I have to stop. I can't stop. I'm driving 65 miles an hour. But I stop and think, okay, where am I going today? So which side of this road do I have to be on? And I start saying to myself, going to the station.
Here's another interesting fact that I think most folks do. When, say, you're pulled over, you're looking at a map. Everybody turns down the radio.
Yeah.
Or you're looking
men
for an,
do.
Looking for an address, you know, on
you
on
a, turn
on
down
a
the
house.
Radio.
Yep.
Why?
It's distracting.
Yeah.
Know that when we're looking for something, but we don't think of that while we're driving. We turn the radio up because, well, we open the window to get a little fresh air. So we have to turn the radio up as opposed to
turn the radio down.
Right.
Yep.
But it's pretty tough right now. We all talk about how our favorite operating system doesn't get viruses, unless your favorite operating system is Windows. And we're all wrong. You know, there as you just heard, there are vulnerabilities in OS X. There are vulnerabilities in the Chrome OS. There's no real safety in those things. You still have to take precautions. One of the things that I grilled the Google people about, and John Passanidi's the one who solved this for us, God love him, or Buddha love him if he prefers, is that Google Plus on your phone or Google Plus on your laptop, is it encrypted? On your phone, let's say you're on your phone, but you're on a Wi-Fi. Is Google Plus encrypted? Good. Or are you just spewing your information out to the real world? John discovered that it is indeed encrypted, so we're very grateful to him for that. And, of course, if you're on Google Plus itself, look to see if, from a browser, look to see if that HTTPS is there. You can even do Google encrypted if you go to encrypted.google.com. That's https://encrypted.google.com. And then you can even enter your web queries encrypted.
There's an interesting article in Tom's Hardware with Charlie Miller, White Hat hacker, who's won a lot of the pwn-to-own products. He's sort of become known for breaking into Apple's. And he recently discovered that the firmware chip inside the Sony batteries that Apple uses can be hacked. And theoretically, you can put a virus in your battery. So even after erasing your hard drive and reinstalling the OS, there's still a virus in it because it's in the battery.
And it's not just the battery. Yeah. Almost every controller in your computer uses that same series of controller chips.
Then there's the Bluetooth keyboard, Bluetooth mice. So you may have noticed you're getting updates for your Bluetooth devices. The fact that they can be updated by the good guys means they can be compromised by the bad guys.
The other problem with Bluetooth, of course, is that you can use a Bluetooth sniffer if you're close enough and grab whatever data are going between the keyboard and the computer. And while that while Bluetooth 2.0 is encrypted, it's not a terribly strong encryption. So you have worries there. Those of you using your Bluetooth headset, people can steal your conversation if they're close enough. People using a Bluetooth mouse, that's a lot less of a real problem since all they can really do is start moving the mouse around on your screen.
Did you have
Bluetooth keyboard, they can steal the data going between the keyboard and the computer, and that would include your username and password.
Did you have the diabetes story? Did I read that in your list?
I don't know.
Okay, so I must have read it on, I read so many blogs, I forget where. Someone has figured out how to hack a diabetes monitor and change the results and could potentially
kill
people.
Sick.
Well, he was a researcher with diabetes himself, and so he was just fiddling with his own machines. But he discovered a vulnerability in this diabetes monitor that could be exploited by bad guys to change the numbers, and
if you're on an insulin pump,
right, giving you too much insulin, or even if you're manually injecting yourself,
right.
If you get the wrong number and shoot yourself with too much insulin, you'll die.
Yep.
So it's, you know, anything electronic can be hacked, and this guy figured out how to break in, you know, to the weak security, if any security, in his own diabetes monitor.
We were talking about that with Ray and Al, who do the Polka Show before us. Ray was talking about how, you know, he's been doing this. Last week was their 30th anniversary on the air, and they were talking about how, you know, 30 years ago all of this stuff was analog, and you pulled levers and pushed real rheostats and stuff like that, and it was some pretty interesting stuff, and it was also much less prone to freezing and stalling and overheating and every other yada yada that you go through. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. What?
It was on Dvorak.
We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, sound bites. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Sorry, we didn't have the music. I now have three mice here to play with.
Yeah, I see that. I tell you, that's why God made...
But you can see the sign now.
Right, I can see the sign now, and that's important. But that's why God made magic markers. Put a letter on them, which one is which.
Well, I'm getting used to setting it up because Thursday night was my first night playing with these three, and
They've got four monitors set up on three computers. He's got two keyboards
three
and
mice.
Three sets of mice.
No, three keyboards, three mice.
Where's the other keyboard? Excuse me, it pulls out from underneath.
This one is nice. I like this, the way he's got this, the keyboard, believe it or not, because you got to type in the CD and the artist and all that into the program.
Yep.
So I can set a CD in here and have it on the edge so I can type it all in and
Very
be
nice.
Looking down on it. So that works, but like I say, getting these mice organized, because some people like it one way, you get in the habit of doing it another, and it's like, okay, this is going to be fun.
Yep. Notorious Spam King Sanford Wallace, or as everyone calls him, Spamford Wallace, is facing federal fraud charges for allegedly breaking into Facebook accounts and sending 27 million spam messages in 2008 and 2009. 27 million. Of course, it did take him 2 years to send them. Of course, Facebook isn't as fast as it used to be. Wallace, 43, allegedly used a phishing attack to steal usernames and passwords from victims and then used the stolen credentials to post spam to victims' walls, the U.S. Department of Justice said. Wallace allegedly made money from the scam by driving web traffic to affiliate marketing companies who pay their members by the number of clicks they can deliver to the websites. The charges are outlined in an indictment filed July 6th, but made public Thursday after Wallace turned himself in to federal authorities. Wallace gained fame as one of spam's most vocal defenders back in the 90s, and he has faced numerous civil actions over his activities, including lawsuits for MySpace and the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. However, this is the first time he's facing criminal charges. Wallace has also been sued by Facebook, which won a $711 million civil judgment against him. $711 million. As part of that judgment, he was banned from Facebook, and the criminal indictment accuses Wallace of contempt of court for allegedly logging onto the social network during an April 2009 Virgin Airlines flight from Las Vegas to New York. Wallace also allegedly set up a Facebook profile in January of this year under the username David Sinful Saturdays Fredericks. We applaud the efforts of the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI to bring spammers to justice, Facebook said in an email statement. Now Wallace also faces serious jail time for this illegal conduct. We will continue to pursue and support both civil and criminal consequences for spammers and others who attempt to harm Facebook or the people who use our services. Wallace could get more than 16 years in prison if convicted. He will be 60 when he gets out. He was released Thursday on $100,000 bond. His next appearance is set for August 22nd at the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California in San Jose, California. How do you feel about Facebook spam? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
It never seems to do too much when they arrest one of these spammers. You know, for a day or two, spam volume drops a little bit, but then, you know, it's magically all the way back up again.
Yeah, and in this particular case, of course, it was all spam on Facebook. I get enough spam on Facebook. They call it Mafia Wars and Farmville and all that other hoopla. I blocked all of that. I couldn't not care less anymore.
Wait, that's your wife that does Farmville, doesn't
My
she?
Wife does Farmville, and I don't see any of the Farmville things that pop up.
They have a new one now called Cityville. And Zynga, the company that makes the games, is about to go public. You may want to get some money in that.
Yeah, I might. The interesting thing, I spend way more of my time on Google Plus now than I ever did on Facebook or on Twitter.
Google Plus for what part of it?
Google Plus is essentially Google's answer to Facebook.
Okay.
And Google Plus is a whole separate new thing. One of the things I like most about Google Plus is you put people into circles. They're like lists on Facebook, but they work a little differently. And what's nice about them is I don't have to mutually friend people I don't know for them to follow me.
Yep.
And I can put people in circles, and then I can send things specifically to the circles. So if I want to post photos of my family, I can send it to the family circle. Nobody else sees it. I know there are ways to do that with lists, but believe me when I tell you that lists on Facebook are really not a form of security. Trust me on this one. So we get we find that a lot of people are doing more on Google Plus, and there's some real interesting things going on there. And a lot of Google people are on there. The person I believe who has the most number of followers is Tom Anderson. Tom, as in Tom is your friend on MySpace, the guy who owns MySpace.
I've really gotten hooked on the Google Calendar. I'm loving that because I can just plug everything into it.
It integrates with virtually every computer and smartphone.
Yeah, and it goes right to my phone, so appointments and everything else. I'm setting up Samantha so she can get into my calendar book.
Multi-user is very easy, so your secretary can schedule an appointment when you're out of the office, and it just shows up on your phone.
Well, what I like having it tied to this way, because usually I'm not allowed to make appointments because Sam controls Dan and my lives.
Oh, yeah.
She has...
Luckily for you.
Yes. And she keeps us, you know, oh, no, you can't do that. You got to do this. You got to do that. Okay. So we leave it all to her. God love her. And to keep both of us straight, that's a challenge right there and a half. But, we've gotten hooked on to the Gmail. And, you know, love that. But talking also about the phones type of stuff that we're going back to, I've gotten hooked on that Word with Friends.
Oh, yeah. It's essentially a Scrabble game with online Scrabble game with people, yeah.
Yeah, I got about 9 games going on, and I'm loving it because, you know, it keeps your mind going and thinking, you know, different words and all this other stuff, and
Yep.
But, yeah, no, and I got to blame you again.
Thank you.
Paper tossed.
I told you it was addicting.
That windage, you know,
it's such a simple game.
Yes.
And yet it is so addicting. Same is true of Jump Ninja.
Oh, I haven't played that yet.
Don't go to that one.
Angry Birds and paper toss.
Yeah.
Cut the rope.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one too.
I haven't played that one.
My grandson's into that one, Cody. And he's, Grandpa, you can get into this one. No, stick to these.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
Battery goes dry, you know, fast enough.
Yeah. My daughter keeps saying, Dad, you should watch this TV show. No, I don't have enough time to add another serial drama to my evening. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. This isn't Tom Anderson, is it?
No, not Tom Anderson, but he is on my Google Plus as well.
There you go.
You know, I think Google Plus is pretty much going to be the Facebook killer, you know?
Well, that's I don't know that yet, but it's certainly a possibility. One of the nice things is they've talked about the fact that they will also have a games circle, and they're probably in talks with Zynga right now. But the nice thing about that is they're saying it won't pop up in your normal stream. So unless you actually go to the games, you won't see the games.
Yeah, it may turn out that Facebook is for average folks and Google is for the techier folks.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe you'll be able to delete the game circle. You know, Google Plus just seems to be more useful and more interactive. You have more control over just the privacy aspect of it. And Google Plus isn't necessarily, ad-based yet. But
right.
They're talking about that, of course. Talking about going into that, you know.
Well, of course they will. I mean, that's how they make their money. They will be bringing ads to it.
It's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, Facebook. I'm not on Facebook, but you know, the games that they have, you know, they're more than games. I'm pretty sure everybody knows that. You know, they want to see, you know, how much time people are actually spending on there. And I mean,
yeah, exactly. Are you on Twitter?
No, I'm not on Twitter, although I have thought about it multiple times, although I just am not really into myself enough to tweet what I'm doing.
Yeah. Now, all right, so I have to ask you this question. You're not on Twitter. You're not on Facebook. What led you to Google Plus?
I heard about it from a friend, and I'm actually on Gmail, you know what I mean? So
yep.
I guess that's,
mm-hmm.
you know...
That can lead to it.
I enjoy not having any spam and stuff. I mean, spam started, you know, back with, AOL in those chat rooms years ago. I mean, a lot of things started in those chat rooms. And, I think Gmail is, I'm trying to convert a lot of people, you know.
Gmail is a terrific product, and so far, at least, it's worked great for me.
Yeah, likewise. And I mean, it's got amazing user capabilities that most people don't even know exist, you know, with filters and stuff like that. And I mean, you know, everybody talks about privacy and security and stuff, but I mean, you know, anything you put online, you have to consider anybody can see it no matter. And nothing's 100% secure. And, you know, everybody talks about, you know, corporations having the data, but you give it to them. So,
right.
You know.
Right, and the reality is that there's nowhere you can send your email unless you're running your own server that somebody else can't see it, and even then it's going to pass through intermediate servers and can be read. So the real question becomes, who do you distrust least?
We've actually been hearing more and more about businesses that are in essence doing a man-in-the-middle attack on the business computers, which they can do because the business owns the computer.
Right.
They're trying to catch people goofing off and not doing real work. So it used to be that if you went to an encrypted site or encrypted your email, then the business owners couldn't tell. But now the businesses can put their own certificate in their business computer, and then you think you're encrypted, and you actually are encrypted. But the business is decrypting it in the middle before encrypting it again and sending it on to your bank or to your Facebook or to those naughty sites you shouldn't be visiting at work anyway.
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I work in the IT field, and I've done plenty of jobs where new systems were being put in place, and the user environment changes for the administration or the employees, whoever it is, and they always want to ask questions, and it's like, you know, they put up these proxies and you can't even go to a website to get a lunch menu. And it's like, well, you know, the employees don't really, you know, get that. But
right.
You know,
I've always been a believer that the internet is an amplifier. It makes good employees better and bad employees worse. And so you have an opportunity to fire the bad ones faster. And promote the good ones faster.
Exactly. I mean, the internet is an amazing resource, and any kind of resource, anything you put in front of a human being, there's going to be the human that's going to use it in the right way or what they think is the right way, and then there's going to be the other human being that's going to use it more maliciously or something like that. And that's anything you put in front of them. I mean, they want more, 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 you know?
Yep, it's exactly right.
Shape or form, you know? And it's people keep talking about, you know, government and stuff. It's like, no, I think you need to just look inside yourself and start right there. Quit looking out and blaming things on others and take responsibility, and everybody needs to take responsibility for the action.
That's right.
You know, and data and the internet and security is a big thing, you know, and...
No, I completely agree.
See where it's going with the devices that we're holding in our hands nowadays. You know, it's more interesting now than ever, and more of a powerful thing than ever. But yeah, well, I appreciate the nice subject on your show. I'll catch you guys later. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. We appreciate that. I should reiterate, we love people to call up with their opinions as well as just their questions. And that was great. And Tom is in many ways correct. You know, when you work for a company, they own your time, and they own your email, and they own everything you do on their computers, unless you've signed an agreement that, you know, not. Which is why a lot of people get into trouble. They start their own businesses, but, you know, at some point in the beginning, they were developing something on the computers at work. Well, that really shouldn't be, because that can cause lots and lots of trouble. So you have to be very careful of that.
I've read some studies that show people waste an average of more than an hour in an average work day. You know, you're supposed to work from 9 to 5, so you show up at 9, but then you take 10 minutes to get your coat off, you know, get your coffee, get your computer turned on, and then you waste another 10 or 15 minutes getting ready to go to lunch and coming back from lunch and all your breaks. And we see that a lot at our stores, you know, as business owners hiring. It's usually high school and college kids just to work in as a clerk in the store. You have to give them specific instructions, you know, literal descriptions of everything you want them to do. You know, it's like, you know, fold these shirts, and they'll fold the ones on this side of the rack, but not the ones on the other side of the rack, because you didn't say that.
A friend of mine is in that position. She works in a store, and she told this sweet young thing to dust the shelves. She dusted all the shelves, but not the top of the shelf, the top rack.
Did she dust the things on the shelf? Or just the
shelves? No, the shelves were empty. They were they had just, you know, they put the shelves up, and they said, she said, dust those off and we'll start filling them up. And she dusted the shelves, but not the top, because that's not really a shelf. That's the top of the cabinet.
Yeah.
You know, of the top of the shelf unit.
And the kids aren't even thinking that. Well, that's not a shelf. I don't have to dust it. It's they just see the world differently.
They don't do it maliciously. Yeah. She was told to dust the shelves, and she had no initiative.
Yeah.
No, I get that. We
and they
see
don't
that a lot.
They don't tell you when they're done, and then you'll go back an hour later and just see them sitting there.
Right.
And you can't say find something to do because they can't.
No, they can't. No. We've been very lucky at work. Everybody I've hired over the past, 15 years, every single one but one, maybe two, were great kids, hard workers, very smart, very... self-starting, had a lot of initiative, a lot of get-go, very pleasing, very pleasant to see that. Been very lucky, got a bunch of great kids. We had, we got a kid now. We got kids, and this happens to us all the time. We got kids we just don't want to get rid of. You know, the quarter's coming to an end, and they're going to be gone, and I don't want them gone.
They're graduating, But we got one guy working for us now, and he's graduating, did graduate high school. But he's going to a local college, so he can stay with us.
That's always good.
You know, two or three years ago, they all went off to remote colleges and couldn't work anymore.
Yeah, now it's too expensive to go to a remote college. Believe me, I know that.
Yeah.
believe me, I know that. But yeah, it's interesting. And getting back to what Tom was talking about with Google Plus, one of the things that I've always really liked. Is Skype, but we'll and Google Plus has something like that. We'll talk about that in just a minute or two, because we're going to take a little break while you listen to these melodious sounds from our underwriters, which are coming right up after these melodious sounds you're listening to right now. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Hey, even Apple is climbing on the Windows 7 bandwagon. Boot Camp, the Mac OS X utility that lets Mac owners run Windows in a separate partition, now requires Windows 7, the company said Monday in a support document. All new installations of Mac OS X 10.7, a.k.a. Lion, are equipped with Boot Camp 4, which runs only Windows 7. The older Vista and even creakier Windows XP do not work in Boot Camp 4. According to Apple, Boot Camp 4 requires an authentic single full installation 32-bit or 64-bit Windows 7 Home Premium Professional or Ultimate disk. But Mac users who are upgrading to Lion or migrating an older pre-Lion machine to new hardware powered by Lion can retain the older Boot Camp 3 and thus the ability to run Vista or Windows XP, Apple said. Those customers cannot upgrade to Boot Camp 4. If your Mac has a Boot Camp partition with Windows XP or Windows Vista, you can continue to use your Boot Camp partition, but you can't upgrade to Boot Camp 4.0, Apple said in an online document. Other users who want to run Windows XP or Vista on Mac OS 10.7 can instead use virtualization software such as Parallels, $80 desktop for Mac, VMware's $80 Fusion, or Oracle's free open-source VirtualBox. Apple did not explain why it's barred Windows XP and Vista from Boot Camp, but the move essentially shadows Microsoft's own position, only Windows 7 matters. As it did 2 years ago with Internet Explorer 6, Microsoft has been running down Windows XP, telling users recently it's time to move on, and has urged them to abandon the OS for Windows 7. Even if Lion did support Windows XP and Boot Camp 4, the decade-old operating system is pricier than the new Windows 7. Amazon.com lists the full version of XP Home for $240, which is $50 more than for Windows 7 Home Premium. Do you run any version of Windows on your Mac? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
The sneaky thing is, the tech note from Apple says that Windows XP and Windows Vista are not supported with Boot Camp 4. That doesn't mean it won't work. It means they won't support you if you try to use it.
Right.
Which I can understand that from a tech support cost view. And even Microsoft would like to stop supporting XP and Vista.
Yep.
In fact, they're very soon going to stop supporting XP.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't be able to help people. They'll take down tech notes.
And that just is ridiculous. It doesn't cost them anything, really.
Except that it just encourages people to not upgrade.
Yeah.
And folks, right now, I don't know. All right, here's my stupid point of view. But right now, with the economy in the tanker as it is, why push it on folks right now? Because, you know, if they're happy with XP, you know, and it's doing what they need to do to sit there and all of a sudden shut the door on them, you're only going to tick people off that much more, and then down the road reconsider maybe what they purchase.
Yep.
Because, I mean, you know, we've been hearing more and more folks calling and trying out Linux or, you know, the various versions of Red Hat and the rest. I mean, it's just, you know, because they're making it so simple. Back in the day, trying to install that stuff, you'd sit there, because I remember you saying how you had to load these drivers, this and this, and then, oh, yeah, I had to start this. Well, now they just put the CD in, which you can download.
It starts it up as easily as Windows does. Put the CD in and sit back.
And you can do the various screens on your desktop, have multiple screen views.
Yep.
Switch from one to the other and have your icons separated. I mean, they actually take all the work out of it. And, oh, it does get the viruses. And
right. And it's free.
Yeah,
free,
it's free. And then you get OpenOffice in there. And OpenOffice, oh, again, is free. So my having to purchase, say, a $400, you know, Microsoft Office package, I don't have to do that anymore. Because even if somebody sends me something in Word, Excel, it doesn't matter what version, I can handle it. Unlike, say, Word. If you have, say, a newer version of Word and I send it to somebody else, it's still, say, on Office 97. They're hosed because they can't open it. The person that had, say, Windows 2011 there has to save it as an old version so that this other person can do it. Well, if I'm running Microsoft or Open Office, that's not an issue. And there's just so many free tools in it. It's like, I'm loving it.
I got to admit, whenever I sit down at a Mac or a Windows machine, it angers me that suddenly the tools that I've been used to under Windows either don't exist or cost money to buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know guys that don't like to add these custom tools to their computers just for that reason. If they ever sit down on someone else's computer and right. their key doesn't work the way like it does on their own computer, it's annoying.
It is annoying. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Marianne from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Marianne.
Hi, thank you, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have heard you talk about a program that you can download from the Internet. I believe it's free, and what it does is completely erases the hard drive before you recycle your computer.
Yep.
But I don't remember the name of it.
Derek's Boot and Nuke at dban.org, I believe, D-B-A-N. Yep.
D-E-B-A-N.
No, D-B-A-N, Derek's Boot and Nuke.
You boot it, you download this disk, or this image, and you burn it to a disk, and then it boots this disk and erases your hard drive completely so that no one can get any data back from it.
Okay. D-B-A-N-A-N-D?
No, just D-B-A-N, which stands for Derek's Boot and Nuke. D-B-A-N, four letters.
Okay, .org.
Yep. Download it, burn it to a disk.
Oh, you download it?
Yeah, you download it, you burn it to a disk.
Uh-huh.
And then you boot with that disk.
Uh-huh.
And it presents you with a number of options. You pick the one you want, and it will erase the drive.
Okay. Now, you say boot with the disk. Can I ask you, how do you do that? Would you put the disk in?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how your machine is set up.
Yeah.
But it might just be as easy as putting that CD in and rebooting the machine. And then it'll come up automatically booting from the CD-ROM drive.
A lot of times you'll see on your computer screen when you turn it on, press
the boot menu.
Right, press F12 to enter boot menu.
F12 or F11.
Something like that. And that lets you pick whether you want to boot a floppy disk or a CD or your hard drive.
USB or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, most computers are designed to boot from the hard drive automatically, and you have to change that to tell it to boot from something else.
Okay, now how do you know which one, if it's F12 or F11?
You have to look at the screen.
Yeah, it'll tell you as it's booting up.
Or look in the manual that came with the computer.
RTFM.
But it does come up on the screen.
Pardon?
It does come up on the screen.
Usually along the bottom.
As the machine is booting, along the bottom it will say, you know, press F2 to enter the menu, press F11 or F12 for the boot menu.
Okay. And it'll tell you whether it's the CD-ROM drive or the hard drive.
Well, no.
And then it'll give you a list and say pick from the list.
Yeah, see, once you hit the F11 or F12, it's going to present you with that menu like Nick was saying. And then from there is what you can select as far as where you want it to boot from, whether it's the CD or a floppy or a disk.
And you're going to pick the CD drive so that it will boot the CD you've made.
Okay. Now, is this both for Windows and the Mac?
It's completely separate because once it boots, it doesn't matter what machine is in. It's in.
It's i386, but I don't know if it'll boot on a Mac. I haven't tried it lately.
Okay.
But Apple has their own tool built into the Apple operating system. You boot the disk that came with the Mac, and there's a disk utility command that will do what we call a zero format. What this program does is it writes zeros to the entire hard drive so that no one can get your data back. And Apple has that tool built in that comes with the Mac.
Oh, okay. I don't think people realize. I know people I know that have Macs didn't realize that.
Yep.
But okay. Well, thank you very much.
No, you're thank
welcome.
You.
Okay, thanks.
This is something we should bring up. When you get rid of an old machine,
yes,
particularly if it's a very old machine, you don't know what data are on it. You can't remember that 7 years ago you put a text file with your credit card number on it, or that you were doing some household finance stuff and stuck an extra copy of your Excel spreadsheet in another folder in case it got lost. So you really, when you get rid of a machine, you need to take the drives out and destroy them separately. Or if you want to give this machine to someone with hard drives, then you need to use a product like Derek's Boot and Nuke or the utility that's built into the Mac to, excuse me, zero out that hard drive. Mm-hmm. So that the stuff that's in it cannot be read by anybody else ever. Well, that's not excuse me, I'm hiccuping, and I haven't even started drinking yet. That's not entirely true. Somebody with the right resources, like the FBI, the NSA,
can get at it.
Can get at it. But if they're that interested in you, then you're past that anyway. So
yeah, and that's a service we also provide.
Looking into people's,
go to the Soundbites webpage, and from there you can get to my site, and like I say, we deal with that all the time for folks.
Yeah,
because I just don't want to be hassled with it, and we just literally take the drive out.
I mean, it's great to want to give the machine to somebody else. We do that all the time for a local company that does stuff with them. But you want to make sure that your data are entirely wiped.
I love it when they say, "Can you destroy the hard drive for me?" I go, "Yeah." Because I literally have this cinder block and this nice big sledgehammer, and I turn the thing into a maraca.
Nice.
Drill press is nice, too.
Oh, yeah.
What works best is a 12-gauge.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. Pull, exactly. Exactly.
Sweet.
I had a friend who offered his friend's farm in Palmyra. So we can go out in the back 40 there and just shoot all day. Nobody will know. I'm tempted by that.
What's
one.
That automatic shotgun? The 12. It's got a 40.
A
40 round drum. A 12.
Yeah, the triple A 12.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's got a 40 round drum. In fact, you can get two of them.
Huh?
Side by side, and it'll
feed either one.
Yeah, and you just go boom, 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 boom.
As fast as you can.
Darn.
Yeah. Well, exactly. But you know what? When you're out in the back 40 with a couple of dozen old computers, and you want to really get out your aggression, I don't know of a better way to do it. I really don't. That whatever else you may think of guns or whatever, it's a great way to get your aggression out.
Yeah. Okay.
300 round per minute.
Well, I wouldn't want to.
And
each
round is a shotgun shell with what, 30, 40, 50 pellets in it?
Or a slug.
Yeah. But that barrel had to be awful hot.
I saw one on Future Weapons, which is it's probably a current weapon by now. It's actually a missile that fits in a standard size shotgun shell, and when you fire it, little fins pop out, and it's got an explosive warhead in it. But it fits in a standard shotgun shell, so that you don't have
to
have a custom weapon to fire this round.
Well, there's a program, I think, on TLC. These guys will build, if you can think of a weapon, they'll build it.
Yeah, it's a reality show at a gun show.
I mean, some of these guns that they're building.
They did one with a Harley handlebar.
Yeah.
Sons of Guns, yes.
You squeeze the clutch to fire the weapon.
Yeah, they actually own a shop.
That would be cool.
Down somewhere where there's alligators.
They did
Louisiana,
that one for the Orange County Chopper guys.
Yeah.
So they had
they're all on the same channel, so they crossed.
Yeah, they had a crossover channel.
Wow.
Yeah. I've always there's actually some place, and I have to go find it again. It's a guy who owns a range, a shooting range, an indoor shooting range, and he actually has a couple of times a year bring your old electronic equipment, and you can shoot it.
Probably down in Texas where everybody just carries guns, you know.
I suspect.
Blow it up.
It's the Frag 12 19mm fin stabilized. High energy or high explosive sensor fused air burst fragmentation shell.
Does that have a short name?
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
Fred. Some abbreviation.
It's the Frag 12.
There you go.
You don't want to
get too
close to
get back
that.
To computer things for just a moment.
Oh, do we have to?
I have to. Okay. I mentioned earlier that we were going to talk a little bit about Skype.
Yes.
Skype actually has some security flaws in it, some fairly serious security flaws, one of which is that it uses a VBR audio compression codec, which doesn't really matter how encrypted it is. It's really easy to break into. It's a very specious, a very vulnerable means of protection. What happens is that no matter how you encrypt it, the codec itself is set up in such a way that phrases can be identified with an accuracy of anywhere between 50 and 90%, and that codec, which actually compresses audio into data for transmission, that's what a codec does. Skype still uses it. And they have a similar problem with their video. And one of the things that Skype.com does not provide HTTPS download. So it's really easy to hijack the website, and you don't know who's downloading what. A lot of people in China have their own Trojan-infected version of Skype now, thanks to the insecure downloads from Skype.com that got hijacked by the Chinese government. So be careful if you're going to use Skype. I'm tending now at least to use Google Hangout more than I am Skype, and I'm having a great time. Nice thing about Google Hangout is you can have up to 9 other people. That is to say, total of 10 people in a room. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is only 59 minutes after the hour, so you have a whole nother hour of this nonsense. Those of you who are not already fighting the crowds downtown. And we'll be back in just a few minutes on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, you can give us a call. The number is 966-JAZZ in the 585 area code. That's 585-966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Nick did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Nick.
Good afternoon, everybody. A couple of quick questions. First of all, I basically want to learn how to, I have Vista Home Basic, and I'd like to learn how to do an uninstall Vista and to restall it again, and then I know I got to save copies of my files and stuff. Really no definite need of why I need to do, but I really enjoy working with these things. I've always wanted to learn how to do this process, but it's always seemed a little daunting to me and a little bit scary. I've done some research online, and there's a lot of places where you can get information, but there's a lot. And to me, a lot of the places that I visit, it's a bit confusing.
Yep.
So I was wondering if you guys could maybe just give me some simple basic steps to make it maybe easier for me to comprehend.
Well, let me give it to you in broad brush overview. The first thing is if the machine is already in use, you have to back up everything, all the documents. Not the operating system and the applications, but all the documents. Now, if you're lucky, they're all under My Documents.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then you have to go ferret them out.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have done that, you want to back those all up and hopefully to a couple of different media. Mm-hmm. So, for example, get a large USB stick.
Mm-hmm.
And a CD or DVD and burn to them.
Gotcha.
One of the
okay.
things that a lot of people miss is their email folders because it's in an invisible folder.
Yeah.
So it's if you just go to My Documents, you'll get all of your visible documents, but you won't get your settings and you probably won't get your mail and address book.
Some of the times you can export that out.
Right.
It's a good idea too.
If you open My Computer and go to Documents and Settings, you'll find your user folder, usually your name or the name you gave it when you set up the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you back up that folder, that has all the invisible stuff in it too, including your email.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I recommend, you know, instead of the flash drives, just get yourself an external USB hard drive.
Right.
One, you back it up, you know, back your data up, and then thereafter you can set it up to do, say, incremental backups. To just constantly, you know, have your stuff that you can plug it in, quick do a backup, and you tuck it away.
You run a backup program that knows what's changed and only has to back up the changed files.
So, you know, you can save yourself a lot of time, grief, aggravation, because anytime a system crashes, because folks say, well, I'll just back up my whole hard drive. Yeah, but usually that's a good sign when Windows crashes. It's a way of saying, well, do a clean install and then put everything back fresh. Because usually the machine runs a heck of a lot better. All this other stuff isn't in there, and it cleans up the registry. Because if folks are using the Windows program to uninstall program, it makes the registry very bulky. Whereas if you use a program like Uninstall, Revo Uninstaller, right from the get-go, it keeps the registry very clean, very neat, and running at its optimum. Because it literally takes the stuff out of the registry so it doesn't get bloated.
And then once you have your data backed up, you can boot your Windows disk and then erase the hard drive and reinstall Windows.
Which you can all do from the boot menu.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said I don't have to do the operating system or the application. Does that automatically get backed up? Or?
No, you don't.
No. And that's the problem. If you're reinstalling the operating system,
right,
you don't want any of the stuff that was in the registry beforehand, because it's probably the reason you're reinstalling.
Yep.
And you're going to have to reinstall the applications anyway, so you might as well not bother taking the time to back them up.
Yeah, it's a waste of time.
Okay, because I thought you said early on that as a backup, you back up everything, but not the operating system and the application.
Well, it's very difficult for a program to back up the running operating system, and you can't back up your applications because so much depends on the registry that if you try to restore those applications, they won't work because the registry is not correct.
Now, here's one thing you can do.
You can clone your entire hard drive.
That's what I was going to say. Once you get everything back, say you go ahead and reinstall the operating system, you put your data back. Mm-hmm. Again, before you put the data on and you've got your machine just the way you want, all the updated drivers and everything else, you can ghost that image.
And Ghost is a cloning program from
Norton. Yeah, that clones it back. So now, say your hard drive does go south on you. All you'd have to do is first do the Ghost part. It would put that image back to that point in time when you did the image, and then you could put the data back. So you don't have to reinstall all the other programs, like, say, Microsoft Office and Skype and all these other programs. They could already be there in that image, but it's back to the day one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just pull back in the data. And then, like I say, weekly or whatever you want, every other day, just keep backing up your data.
Yeah. Right, okay.
But if the idea is to...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if the idea is to do this because you're just interested in doing it...
Right.
Then you want to... The best thing to do is to wipe it all out completely and start from scratch, because that gives you the best experience in doing it yourself.
Right. There's no point, because I enjoy working with it, tinkering with it. No imminent need to do it. No.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah,
I love it.
I've also heard the term that, you know, reinstallation of drivers. Mm-hmm. Do I have to do any of that? Or?
Yes.
Yep.
Most likely you'll have to go to the various websites, say for your video card or sound card or that, they have different drivers that you want to get the latest. Most of the time it's just the video.
If you buy a brand name computer, it generally comes with all the drivers on the reinstallation disks. If you buy a custom-built computer, they will give you the driver disks for your sound card, for your video card, for your Ethernet card, and then you usually have to download the drivers for your printer and your scanner. So a driver is basically a piece of software that tells your computer how to use one of your peripherals, one piece of your hardware. So that all has to get reinstalled as well. The major manufacturers have websites where they keep those drivers listed for you, so you can go to, say, the Dell website or the HP website and get all the drivers for your particular model.
So if I have, like, a Dell Latitude 620, would I just click on the Dell drivers for the 620 Latitude and bring everything in?
No, it doesn't automatically do anything. You have to go to the Dell website, you put in the service tag number of your computer,
okay,
and then it shows you a list of the drivers, you pick what operating system you're using, and then you download each one of those drivers, and then you have to install each one of those drivers.
Okay, each one of them then?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
If you're looking for some help or just, you know, some people to talk to about this, the local users groups are a good place to go to. The Rochester Computer Society meets the second Tuesday of the month, and the Apple Cider Macintosh group meets the second Wednesday of the month. The RCS, actually this month, is their picnic. Cider had our picnic last month. RCS is meeting at Buckland Park this week or next week, and Rochester Computer Society is meeting at the Lutheran Church in Fairport. Summer meetings are always rough because we usually meet at schools, and the schools are all closed in the summer, so it's looking for finding places. So Rochester Computer Society is rcsi.org and applecider.org for the Macintosh Users Group.
One other quick question. I held you on the line long enough. I don't have anything on my system like Microsoft Excel or Word or anything like that. But what do I do? What I do use is OpenOffice.
Yep.
This is excellent compared to almost identical. Now the thing of it is, if I have either one of their spreadsheets or one of their Word documents, and I want to send it out as an attachment to someplace else, do I have to change the file extension on that?
You have to change the file type. You can't just change the extension.
The type, rather. I'm sorry.
You have to do an export.
Mm-hmm. Or a save as.
You can pick text file to make sure everyone can read it. Or if you know they have Microsoft, RTF is a better format. It can maintain some of the graphics and the formatting. If you know they have Microsoft Word, you can send it as a doc file. But RTF is usually the best format to send
it as.
That's
the safest.
So because you don't have to know what they're using at the other end, and every word processor on every computer on every platform can read an RTF file.
Richard Thomas.
Rich text format.
Which
was annoyingly made by Microsoft, so we have to use something for Microsoft.
The same is true for Excel. You can save it for the spreadsheet. You can save it as an OpenOffice spreadsheet. An Excel spreadsheet, an Excel 2010 spreadsheet.
Or a generic SYLK.
Or a generic SYLK or CSV file, comma-separated variable.
They do give a lot of Excel options.
Right. Yep. And once you have saved it in that format, by the way, you can probably email it right from inside OpenOffice because there's a little envelope icon. You click on that, and it'll let you email it through your default email program.
Okay, so the RTF would be a good one because you're sure that everyone can get that.
Yeah, it's pretty universal.
Yeah, in fact, even WordPad will open it. So even if they don't have any sort of Office product of their own, if they have WordPad on a Windows box, which comes with it, by the way, they can open up an RTF document.
And
you might lose... If you use really, really esoteric stuff, it might lose it under RTF. But for 90% of people, there will not be a problem.
Yeah, if you're using multiple columns or you're wrapping text around graphics, that won't work in an RTF.
Now, this is extremely basic. Yep. And then for the Excel, it would be any of the Excel options that are there?
Right. If you know what version of Excel they're running, you can save it specifically as that version. Same with Word.
And if I don't know, what would be recommended?
Well, CSV, comma-separated variable, can be opened by pretty much any spreadsheet around.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Including Lotus 1-2-3.
Yep.
Gotcha. Which is where it was invented.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, thanks, everybody, for your help. A great show, as usual. And have a good rest of the day and good weekend.
Thank you.
We get that question a lot from people that, someone sent me a file and I can't read it. It's because I have a Mac, isn't it? No, it has nothing to do with you having a Mac. It has to do with they assuming you had Microsoft Word.
Right. Okay, our next caller, Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. How are you today?
I'm okay. I got a comment. I was listening to you before about Microsoft and XP. They must think everybody's got a lot of money. Because, all of a sudden they're not going to support my XP. I can't afford one. I got Windows 7 on my laptop, but I can't afford it on my desktop.
Yeah. Well, their basic assumption is it's been 10 years. You probably could have saved up enough money to buy a new computer.
Yeah, when you're unemployed, you don't save up anything.
And that's the problem that they don't understand.
Okay, my question is, on my XP desktop, I very seldom never use it anymore because I got my laptop. I turned it on the other day, did the complete security tango, no problems whatsoever. At night, I shut it down. Following day, I turned it on, did a few things around the house. About an hour and a half later, I came back. I walked into my bedroom, and it was rebooting itself, and I hadn't even been near it. Why?
One of two reasons. One is there was an update. and it rebooted itself because of that, although that's kind of rare these days.
I go in and look for them.
Well, that's okay. I was about to say it's kind of rare. But it could also be that it had overheated. Do you have an air-conditioned house?
Yes, I do. I have central air.
We've been getting a lot
of that. Power outage?
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of that this summer. My computer is running hot. Yes, you know, they do that now, especially when it's really hot outside.
It's 100 degrees outside, and you don't have air conditioning, your computer will run hot. But, all right, so has it been running fine since?
Yeah, well, as I said, because of my laptop, I don't turn it on very often. But this has got, this is the one that's got the two hard drives.
Yep.
The one, the 500 with the music. I only turn it on to load my iTouch to put my music on. That's the only reason I use it for.
Right.
But I don't turn it on very often.
You know what? Without you being in the room to see what happened, it's hard to know. Could be any one of a million things.
Yeah, it had to be, the hardware would have to be tested.
It could have been an upgrade to something. It could have been a momentary glitch in your
brownout
in your electrical system. But without, you know, the next time you run the Tango, pay special attention to what it comes up with. But it's more likely not to be a virus and more likely to be some sort of just electrical glitch somewhere in the world.
I read on Google and it said something about the fan or the power supply maybe going. Could that be it?
Well, yeah, but if that were the case, well, yes, it could certainly be. Particularly,
you
got
to test it.
It'd
have to be tested.
Yeah. And if it happens more frequently, then you know there's something more going on.
Maybe it happens every 6-7 months.
Yeah. That could. I've been blaming a lot on sunspots lately.
Yeah.
Okay, there was a massive solar flare the other day and a huge coronal mass
86.
Ejection.
Wait a minute. You too.
I'm sorry. What?
MemTest 86. I went into the website and I couldn't figure out, because I figured, well, I'll run this. But I couldn't figure out which one to pick.
Well, for XP,
you had so many listed. That's what I said. I got a 64-bit machine and they say it doesn't work well on a 64-bit
correct.
Machine.
A lot of them don't. Because 64-bit is so new.
So,
yeah, you've got to do something more at the more of the base level that it doesn't get into the operating system and know of 64-bit. If you want to test it out.
So what do I do?
Well, you say you'd have to take it somewhere to have it tested.
Also, I have to take it to you, Dave, huh?
I almost wouldn't bother unless it starts happening more often.
Yeah, I wouldn't jump the gun yet. See if it happens again. You know, just because it happens once, I wouldn't panic.
Yeah, like I said, it happens once every seven months or so. Yeah. It's been almost a year since the last time.
Don't worry about it.
We've had people say that it crashed once.
Yeah.
Okay. I got one more quick question, then I'll let you go. Why is my laptop? I went to Best Buy and the guy from Time Warner was there, and he looked at my account and I asked him, "Why is my laptop, which is Windows 7 brand new, as slow as my desktop, which is XP?" And he couldn't figure out the answer. I turn it on.
Yeah, but it depends on how much memory's in it, what the speed of the machine is, and what else is running in the background. There's a lot of variables. Without seeing it, you can't say it.
You can have a processor with a fat
gigs of memory, a 500-gig hard drive, and I have AVG Internet Security on it.
Yeah, but on your laptop, usually nowadays they come with a lot of crap loaded on top of them.
I took most of that crap off.
And a lot of times there's so many different processors. You may have, say, a 2 gigahertz processor, but it's only got 128K cache. And you look at another machine, it's got a 2 gigahertz processor, but it's got 4 megs of cache.
Well,
and so it's going to run faster.
I was just curious. Because I thought to myself, it's brand new, and I'm having it's just as slow as the other one.
There's so many different
there's too many
pieces
variables.
Involved. You know, it's like, why is one car faster than another car?
Okay.
Yeah, the engine, the transmission, the driver.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. Have good
luck.
Thank
you. Bye. That's one of the things that we often find as a problem. You know, people talk about a lot of the things that can make a computer different from another. I mean, we see that with two models of the same computer from one of the big manufacturers. They use whatever parts are available right now. So today's run uses one component. Tomorrow's run uses a separate component. The run after that uses a different component. So How do you know? You know, how do you know which is going to be the fastest one? You don't. You buy two models. They come from two different runs, even though they're the same product, and they work differently. Listen, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, so you've only got 40 minutes of this nonsense left to go through. We'll be back with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve.
I don't know. I really like that song. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites. And we have Gil on the line from Webster, New York. Welcome, Gil. What's your question?
Well, actually, a comment and a question.
Perfect.
So the comment is for the previous caller that was thinking about doing a brain transplant on his machine, let's say. One suggestion might be something I've done myself, and that is to do all the backups that you want, do everything that you want to make yourself feel good, and then simply take the old hard drive out of the system, put it on a shelf, put it in a box, and protect it with your life, and then put a new hard drive that can be bought for, you know, especially if you get them on sale, buy a small, you know, cheap hard drive, put it in the system, and then start to just experiment with loading up things and reloading the operating system, everything. You basically can't do any damage because your hard drive, as long as you keep your eye on it and the aliens don't get it, is sitting on a shelf where you can watch it.
That's actually brilliant, Gil. That's a great idea. And if Nick is still listening, that's a great idea. Of course he is. You can. You have to know what kind of hard drive you have in order to properly replace it. You just can't go randomly out and buy one. But once you get the right, you know, it's got to have the right connectors. Once you get the right connectors, you can add that hard drive in place of the one you just took out. And and Gil is right. Protect the old one and put in the new one. In fact, when you unwrap the new one and put it in the drive, it usually comes in an anti-static bag and then in a box that has some sort of foam around it. So put the old one in the anti-static bag and in the foam box, label it correctly and stick it on the shelf where it'll be safe. And then you can play to your heart's content knowing that if you completely screw up everything, you can always go back to that old drive. Brilliant idea, Gil.
Yeah, very good.
Well, so also I would suggest if you don't know what kind of drive to put in the machine, don't do any of that.
Right. If what you want to do is learn, get somebody who knows that stuff over to help you, right. At least figure that part out, and then go from there.
Well, that's sort of a litmus test. If you don't know what kind of drive to put in, go find out before you try any of this at home,
yeah, exactly.
So to speak. just a quick engineering comment. It's interesting. I listen often on Ustream, and I hear sort of a harmonic type of modulation on the Ustream. It almost sounds like the level somewhere in the system is too high, and it's what I would say aliasing some digital converter somewhere along the line. Yet when I listen on your phone line on hold, well, first I got static, and then when Dave picked up the second time, I actually heard your signal, and it all sounded, you know, the audio sounded perfect. So somewhere between after you're bored and somewhere where it gets to Ustream, there's some aliasing going on because it sort of has a melodious harmonic content that, although you might deserve it, is coming for free.
Cool. Do we sound like each one of us is a duet?
No, there's a little bit of a harmonic overtones to your voice that just sneak in there.
Me in stereo.
It's probably from
scary
aliasing or something like that.
Yeah, or it might just be that it's still being picked up by Steve's microphone in his Mac.
Well, it could be the aliens.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting around nowadays.
It could be.
I can't tell whether they're disguising themselves as squirrels or not, but anyway, that's a totally different...
I saw a couple of squirrels in our backyard doing what squirrels do. And at first I thought they were fighting, and I thought, well, this is going to end up bloody. Apparently I was wrong about that.
Well, you have to keep an eye on them. Remember, they're very clever, and they could be aliens. So back to my question, which
does it involve tinfoil hats?
Later would likely come up here. So I'm thinking we may be no longer living where life is worth living, and I'm not sure what life will be like after that. But we're actually moving to Fairport.
Wow!
Taking the turn south, becoming
where it's warmer because you need that.
Yeah, we do. We really do. I mean, you know, it's frightening up here, but no, life is definitely worth living in Webster, and I would highly recommend it. Nonetheless,
and you're leaving.
As we take our long and arduous task of moving ourselves
take
south,
plenty of water.
The question is, we would like to put in some kind of a home audio system that basically is operated remotely through an iPad 2, that we bought from Steve, who is gracious enough to bless us with one, and works on a Windows system of some sort with iTunes. So what I'm looking for is a suggestion of the products and software to make a really smooth remote-controlled iPad system that I can basically wave my hands magically over the iPad and the music will come out. You know, it kind of goes around and around and it comes out there and you want to point to there and it might be here and it might be there and it might be in the dining room and it might be in the living room. So things like that.
Yeah, Apple has their own products, the Airport Express wireless base station that also supports audio, and then the Apple TV that supports video, so you can plug that into your stereo system, plug it into your television. And it will it can be controlled from the iPad or from iTunes on Mac or Windows. Sonos is probably the biggest name in wireless and network hi-fi systems. You basically, it's a speaker that hangs onto your Ethernet, so wherever you put Ethernet, or they also have Wi-Fi versions of them. You have a base station that has all of your music on it, or it can pull music from your computer, and then you can send that music to the remote speakers, so you can put speakers in multiple rooms around the house. It also has links to Pandora and Spotify, so that you can listen to streaming music over the internet as well. It's kind of pricey, although they did just lower their price. I think the base station starts at $300, and the individual speakers are like $200. But if you're putting together a new house, you can often get speakers wired directly into the walls while they're putting the walls up, which is always a lot easier than afterwards as well. But the Sonos wireless speaker systems are very, very high quality in terms of music reproduction as well.
Very good. Yeah, okay, so I've heard of both of those. I was looking to see whether you mentioned anything that I hadn't heard about, but yeah, those seem to be the ones that actually we, it turns out the house we're moving to has speakers in the wall. Somebody already thought of that, and thank goodness they put wires all in one spot, so everything all we have to do is plug lots of things in.
Yep.
There you go.
A bridge control somewhere.
Very cool.
Then invite us over for a party.
Yeah. Okay, we will do, as long as you bring lots of rum balls, I guess.
Hey, we can do that. Piece of cake.
All right, thanks, guys, and
later.
Keep up the great work.
Thanks,
thank
Gil.
Thank you.
Take it.
I was at a customer once where they had an old style, you know, digital music system. It was a stereo in the basement that had a hard drive built into the stereo, and you fed your discs into it, and it it would rip all the tracks off the CD and then play them through the stereo.
I've moved all my music up to Google Music, so I can just use my phone or my anything from an iPad to an Asus Transformer or anything else, or any of my computers, to just listen to it wherever I am. It's very nice. It uses bandwidth, but so far, at least for the home, that's still free. All right, our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Well, going back a step further for the guy who wanted to back up his hard drive, my suggestion is that he get his drivers before he does anything with his hard drive.
Good
point. Because if he's missing a video driver, he's not going to be able to go anywhere or do anything.
And if he's missing his Ethernet driver, he can't download the new drivers. So.
Yeah,
but that should
excellent
come,
point.
But
excellent
that should
point.
Come with the system.
Yeah,
like, that, at least that.
He had mentioned he had a name brand computer, so he probably has those drivers built into the disks.
Yeah, because anything on the motherboard, which the network would be, usually that, the video, the onboard sound and all that, usually comes with your CD that you can boot in, just at least, to get, like you say, connected to the Internet.
But that is a very good suggestion.
Yes,
thank
very
you.
Good.
Download your drivers first before you erase your computer to reinstall Windows.
Yeah, I had a question, too. You mentioned, or Nick mentioned, an uninstaller. I don't know if he said Beagle, Regal, some uninstaller program.
Revo. Revo uninstaller. That's R-E-V-O installer.
Okay, is that freeware?
Free.
Or
yes, it is. And it does an excellent job.
Okay, that's all I
have. See, basically what happens, though, is in Windows uninstall, all it does is turn one bit off. It leaves the remnant still in the registry. So even though you're uninstalling, say you uninstall a program, say, 4 or 5 times, each time it puts itself in the registry as a new entry, whereas Revo goes in and cleans it all out, takes it literally out. And that's what I mean. It keeps it slim and trim.
Can I use it, like, right now on my Windows 7 computer, even though I've never had it on there
yes,
before?
Yes, you can, sir.
Can I check for back remnants of programs that I've uninstalled?
No, it's only going to know what's on there right now.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But it can clean out your registry of leftover uninstall bits.
Yep.
It works best if you have it ahead of time, but it can go in afterwards and clean up, too.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Revo uninstaller, that's another point for Nick. When you get your machine, the first thing you should install on that new rebuilt or redone hard drive is Revo uninstaller. The second thing you should install is antivirus. And from there on, everything else. But really, on a brand new machine, the first thing you should install is the Revo uninstaller. All right, our next caller is Ed, who probably is from Ithaca, New York.
Yes, I'm trying to...
I am indeed. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, thank you.
Well, that's going to cause confusion.
and yes, I did install Revo on mine first thing, and that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
I have two questions of very different natures. Yep. First question is, I've got a Mac using version 10.5.2, and I wanted to find out what's involved in upgrading to the newest operating system.
A time machine. Well, it depends on how you define upgrade. If you go to your Apple menu and choose System Updates, it will download the free update to 10.5.8, which was the last of the 10.5s. And then a lot of security updates you're probably missing because you're way behind in your updates. Currently, in order to upgrade to 10.7, which is Lion, you must already have 10.6. Unfortunately, it's hard, if not impossible, to find a System 10.6 disks to purchase anymore because Apple discontinued them a couple of months ago, which is very annoying for people who didn't get around to updating.
Yeah.
At my store, Mac Ave and Victor, we've got a couple of the older box sets left, which was the combination of the macOS 10.6 and the new iLife programs and the new iWork programs. It was Apple sort of basically bundling all of their programs together in a single box. All of the Apple stores have discontinued all of their boxed software because in System 10.6, you buy software over the Internet. So for people that still have 10.4 and 10.5, it's almost impossible to find 10.6 anymore, and you need 10.6 to go to 10.7. There is some hope. Apple has said that sometime this month, in August, they're going to be releasing 10.7 on a USB drive instead of a DVD, which is interesting, so that you'll be able to install...
Well, they're selling an awful lot of systems that don't have DVDs.
Right, they don't have DVD drives, so it's got to be a USB drive now. With 10.7, you have to download it from the Mac App Store over the Internet. And for people that have slow Internet connections, that may not be possible. So they're going to be releasing a 10.7 USB installer. The rumors are it's going to be about $70. And theoretically, it will then install on any Mac with a USB port, which is any of them. And it won't require any previous system software.
Any Intel-based Mac.
Right, any Intel-based Mac. Thank you. We don't know for sure how that's going to work yet because it actually hasn't been released. So right now, if you really want to get up to Lion right now, you're going to have to dig around in the aftermarket to try to find a 10.6 disk. And finding legal disks online is sometimes tricky, too. You see a lot of stuff on eBay and Craigslist, and it turns out to be a copy of somebody's disk, or it's a disk that came with a computer, and it only works with that computer. So finding a 10.6 disk so you can install 10.6 to get the App Store so you can download 10.7, so it's quite a rigmarole to do that, or wait and see if the 10.7 USB disk will install without needing all that previously.
Well, it certainly sounds like waiting is the easiest way to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and it's, good. Thank you. Now, my second question is completely different. I'm wondering if you know of or could recommend even a program that would do a collect podcasts on a thumb drive rather than on the computer itself.
Tell you what, hold on, and we'll get back to you as soon as we come out of this break.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be Ed, stay on the line.
I will.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Ed from Ithaca, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Ed from Ithaca on the line, who just asked about collecting podcasts on a thumb drive. My assumption, Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am.
My assumption is you want to do this automatically.
Not necessarily. Well, I want a program that will automatically collect the ones I want, yes.
Yeah, all right, there's a couple, maybe several. One is called MyPodder. MyPodder. You can get that at either at podcastready.com or podblogger.de/mp3stick.
Okay.
There's another one called GPodder, which you can get with a G. GPodder, I guess.
Right.
Which you can download at USB. portableapps.com/gpodder. Well, just go to usbportableapps.com.
Right.
Gpodder.org.
Or gpodder.org will do it too. Or pendriveapps.com. So there's a bunch of stuff like that that's available.
iTunes itself can do it by pointing the iTunes library to that USB stick.
But it'll hold your whole library.
Right, it wants to put your entire library there.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Right, and the only other thing to do, of course, would be to move everything over by hand.
But yeah, just when a new podcast comes in, drag it to the thumb drive.
But the whole point behind GPodder and MyPodder, they were really designed to be used any MP3, with certain brands of MP3 players, that where you could just plug that right into your computer, and then the software would download it right to the MP3 stick, so that you could then plug it in overnight, and then in the morning unplug it and walk away and have all your new stuff there. MyPodder, I know, is compatible with Windows, Linux, OS X, Windows Mobile, U3, so, there's a lot of things it'll talk to. GPodder, I'm not sure of. It's open source, but I don't know. They don't mention which operating systems it works with.
Okay.
Let's see.
If they're stored
FBSD,
in MP3
Windows.
Style, that should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Yeah. This is one of the real interesting dichotomies, isn't it? This is true even of people who have iPhones and Google phones, with the fact that now so many companies are limiting the amount of data you get per month for your money, you want an alternate way to download new music to it. And this is certainly one of those ways because, you don't want to spend your meager 2 gigs a month downloading music. That 2 gig will go pretty freaking quickly. All right, our next caller is Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hi. I have a wireless adapter from Linksys that I'm trying to use. Just built a new computer, and I've got Windows 7 running on it. But I can't get the wireless adapter to work.
You can't get it to work, or you can't get it to talk to the internet.
Well, it's not even showing. When I click on the I can't find it again on under
devices.
Devices, yeah, where it shows which wireless devices are working. It says it's not enabled.
Do you have the latest driver, 64-bit or 32-bit?
It's a 64-bit.
Mm-hmm.
Downloaded it. And it's provided, the manufacturer's called Raylink Technology, and it's the latest version. I believe it's 3.0.9.1.
Well, I thought you said it was a Linksys adapter.
It is a Linksys adapter, but this is the driver that was available, I think.
At Linksys? That doesn't
No,
that right.
Yeah, you'd go to Linksys website to get the Linksys drivers.
Yeah, my son actually did the installation.
What?
He might have grabbed the wrong ones.
And they didn't work, and so he went to the Windows, I think, to the Microsoft site.
No.
Yeah, Microsoft doesn't get it right with third-party products very often.
What model adapter is it? Do you know offhand?
It's version 4.1 of the WMP54G.
Hold on.
Oh,
there.
That's a very old one.
Yeah.
So you got to go to the Linksys archives to find that driver.
And they might not have something that will work correctly with 64-bit.
Yep. It's a discontinued model.
Hasn't it been out since Windows 7 was released? It hasn't been out that long. I know I got it a couple years ago.
Let's see.
It could have been out just recently, but it depends on whether they did a correct 64-bit driver for it.
You said version 4?
Especially 4. On a discontinued 1. Unit.
Version 4.1.
And what version of Windows are you using?
7.
Okay, yeah, according to Linksys, there is no Windows 7 driver. Vista 32-bit or XP.
Really?
Yep.
Well, then there's no alternative but to buy another adapter, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's true.
The WMP54G, that's an internal PCI card, right?
Yes, right. Okay. You put it into a PCI slot, yes.
Okay, yeah. Yep. You'd probably be better off with a newer USB stick that would have Windows 7 drivers. So that's probably why he went to a third-party driver, to try to make it work.
Yeah, it ain't gonna.
Yeah, not gonna happen.
Mm-mm.
No, I'm afraid not.
So I'm not familiar with these USB sticks that you were just mentioning. This goes into a USB port and it has...
Yeah, the problem with those, of course, is they stick a lot farther out of your computer.
Yeah.
Right.
Linksys
you have to remember to take them off before you put them in the case and put them back on after you put them in the case. If you can find a one that slides in...
It's a tower. It's not a laptop, so...
Oh, then it doesn't... Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The current model PCI card is the WMP600N, and I'm looking to see if it has a Windows 7 driver.
That will work. I have an older router, which is a G model, WRT54G router.
Yeah, that shouldn't matter.
That'll
work.
Yeah, the card will back down to the older standard. But then when you get a newer router, it will be ready for the newer card.
Okay. So that's, you said
WMP600N.
600N, okay. All right, great.
Okay.
Well,
I hate.
Good luck, and let us know how you make out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hate the Linksys website now that Cisco took over. You can't find anything. Drivers and software information are separate. So that when the sales site and the service site are completely separate. So when I went to the sales webpage, I couldn't find the service site. But yes, that does have a Windows 7 driver. Annoyingly, last updated September 2009.
Yeah.
So does that mean it's worked fine since then?
Mm.
Yeah, right.
Or they abandoned it?
They haven't needed it? Well, that's the currently selling PCI card from Linksys.
Okay.
By, Cisco is sort of one of the best name brands in networking, and they bought the Linksys Home brand, and we were hoping that Cisco would bring up the quality of Linksys and not that Linksys would drag down the quality of Cisco.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. All right, our next caller is also Henry, but this one's from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I've actually got a follow-up on something I heard you talking about earlier in the program about backups. I believe it might have been Steve was saying about instead of the My Documents folder, there was another folder that was also good to
Yeah, it's the higher-level folder. My Documents is in your user folder, and your user folder has everything in it, all of My Documents, all your driver, or not drivers, your email, your contacts, your calendar, so everything is stored in that user folder.
Okay, you're talking about the it would be called Henry, that's one level below the documents and settings?
Yeah, on the main hard drive, there's documents and settings, and in documents and settings are each user's individual folder.
Okay,
and
now to copy that to a flash drive before.
Yeah, you can't copy it.
No.
You have to use a backup program.
Oh, you have to use a backup program.
Yeah, because there's invisible files, there's files that Windows is using, so Windows won't let you copy
it. Stop it.
Okay. Okay, I understand that. But the way I do it normally today is I copy the My Documents folder. But I got a question about that. I used to do that to a CD when it was small enough, and I could just do a copy. Now, I am running Windows XP Home Edition, if that makes a difference. Now, I've had to go up to a thumb drive. I use a couple of different thumb drives and keep them in different places. But instead of just taking it and dragging and dropping it over to a thumb drive, whenever I do that now, instead of copying the whole folder over, it just creates a shortcut on the thumb drive.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. What I've always tried to make a habit of is right-dragging it. And so instead of using your left button to drag it, use the right button to drag it. And then when you let go of the button, you'll get an option that says copy here, move here, or create shortcut here.
Okay. And so you're saying doing a right drag instead should be able to... Because right now what I have to do is I have to go into the folder and copy everything inside the folder.
Right.
Well, you should also be able to right click on My Documents and say copy.
Okay.
And then open the flash drive, right click again on the flash drive and say paste.
Oh,
in fact,
okay.
How do you add something to send to?
So you're not actually copying it directly into the flash drive. You're copying it like to the clipboard,
right?
And
into memory.
Right.
Well, it essentially does the same thing, but the way you do it will overcome the limitation you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's also
I will try that, gentlemen.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
There's also a send to option.
Yeah.
I don't remember how to get something in the send to, but you can try right clicking on that My Documents folder, and there's a send to. That usually has something like send to email, or it may have that flash drive, you know, send to drive E in that menu as well, and to easily be able to drag it. Or you can look at our link list. We've got several different backup programs we've talked about in the past. The advantage of a backup program is that it will back up only changed files, and you don't have to copy everything again.
Right. Actually, click Start, click Run. Type send to and click OK, and then you can add a drag or drop operation to move the item you want into the send folder, or point to new and file and shortcut and do that. And there's a couple of different ways to do it, but the best thing to do is to look it up on the web, because we don't have a lot of time left to tell you about it. In fact, that music tells me we've got 1 minute. So, but there are ways to do that. We want to thank you all for listening. We want to thank everyone who called in. We want to question those of you who did not call in and wonder why you did not. Hopefully you were out having a nice birthday party with a red-headed cake to celebrate Lucy's 100th. We want to thank you all for listening in, wasting 2 hours of your life with us. We couldn't tell you how much more we could appreciate it. So thanks a lot. We will be back here next week, of course. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and, of course, with you. You have spent the last 2 hours listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Wow, I cannot talk today. I didn't have caffeine today. Coffee, but it was all decaf. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.